From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show, and we are on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. And actually, it's begun to happen. Entrepreneurs more now than ever are succeeding here in the Sacramento region, and winning can be infectious in many ways. So when an entrepreneur succeeds, it ends up creating other opportunity for other people to succeed as well. Entrepreneurs end up creating all kinds of opportunity. And part of that is wealth creation, right? It's okay to build wealth, and it's actually a really good thing. And it means that we pay a lot of taxes and help support our government. But it also means that we have extra money to invest into the local community, into the little leagues, into our churches, and ultimately provide opportunity potentially for the next one in line as an investor, which is what I'm working to do here at on the Mark Haney Show and on the Growth Factory. But you've got to not just get ready, you've got to be ready for when that moment happens, when you end up suddenly discovering, wow, I'm successful. I'm making some good money. I just sold my business and now I've had this big gain. You don't want to have to get ready at that moment. And sometimes that moment sort of sneaks up on you. You're in the middle of the trenches, you're fighting the fight, and all of a sudden, holy cow, we're winning. And you need to be ready when that happens. And our guest today is Jeffrey Bangeter. He is the president of Bangeter Financial. And Jeff is one of those guys that comes in to help you get ready, be prepared, so when that day happens, you can put your money to work to help build that wealth and ultimately achieve the dreams that you have. And what Jeff does is he's got a products and a system that will help you. Some of you probably got stuck a little bit when I said pay the money to the government, right? None of us are excited about doing that. Jeff's got tax strategies to help us pay less or maybe postpone some of those payments. And, you know, 1031 exchanges, we know, for residential real estate, commercial real estate. He does those, but he also is involved with opportunity zones, which is a really an interesting thing if you have a big gain from the sale of your business. So stick around. Hear the story of Jeff Bangeter. He's a highly successful entrepreneur. He's very generous in giving back to our community. And I think you're going to like Jeff. He's also a super fit guy. So stick around. All right.
Entrepreneurs are the heroes of the American economy. They take the risks, create the opportunities, and move the molecules. Now, back to the Marquee Media Studio, it's the Mark Haney Show.
What if you actually did it? What if you actually reached all your goals, hit all those dreams, you built the big business, you bought all the real estate, everything was going the way that you wanted? He decided, you know what? I need to take some chips off the table. Maybe I'm going to sell one of my pieces of real estate or sell my company. And you have this big win, this big capital gain, right? And you had all this money and then you got to pay half of it to the government. Oh, it kills me to think about when that happens. But today we are here with Jeff Bangeter. He is an expert in helping solve that challenge that is kind of a good problem to have, right? When you're winning, it's a good thing. But then when you have to pay it all to the government, that's not so fun. So, Jeff, welcome to the show. Want to get to know you personally, but also want to know how you, maybe your journey to helping people, helping others, people that have, had some success, really not pay so much to the government and how they might allocate those resources. So tell us about Bangor Financial and really your pathway to getting into this business.
Yeah, so I started in the financial industry way back in 1979. And as a young kid, really, you know, I thought that 12% interest rates were normal. And every day I went to work I was working as a mortgage loan officer for Wells Fargo Mortgage. Every day I went to work, I had to call people up and say, you no longer qualify for your mortgage because the interest rates had shot up some more. And these were, you know, $50,000 mortgages on $80,000 houses back in the day, right? And then, so I transitioned into the full financial services industry. I had my real estate license and my mortgage license at the time, went and got insurance, got securities licensed, and have really continued to expand my education. So today I'm an enrolled agent, tax professional. I don't do taxes, but I understand the impact it has on investments. Because you can make a great return, but if you give 30, 40, 50% of it to the government, it wasn't that good, mm-hmm. right? And so I really look at that as a primary catalyst to what we recommend to our clients. So that real estate background has always been part of me. And as we started seeing securitized real estate products, so these are real estate, but they're in the securities industry, become available. We saw the 1031 tax deferred exchange become available where you could help somebody retire from landlording and not pay all of that tax. And as you pointed out, it is significant, right? And especially here in California, it's just massive. And so if you could retire from landlording and not pay the tax, then you're going to be a lot better off. And ultimately, the rules are you can defer until you die. And then when you die, your heirs get a step up in basis. So all of that tax is just forgiven. And then the other tool that became available in 2019 officially was part of the 2017 tax law changes, but it didn't happen until late 19 rather. And so what happened is they brought out the Opportunity Zone funds. And so these are another tool. Most people wouldn't do their own Opportunity Zone because, you know, you're probably going to spend $20 to $100 million to build something. And so this is a tool that allows people to invest alongside these really big real estate sponsor companies and get a tax deferral. Now, there aren't many years left on it presently. It's going to, the tax will be due at the end of 26. There is some talk in Congress about extending it a couple of more years, which would be good if they did that.
Well, let me hit pause for a second. Yeah. Let's focus on the 1031 for a minute. Yeah. You and I, so I sold a commercial building, had a gain, and needed to roll it into something, and you can use this 1031 exchange, and there's requirements that you've got to stick by in order to do that. So I rolled some of the money into some residential real estate and did a 1031 exchange into these properties. And my daughter's a real estate person, so she knows how this stuff works. But then part of the gain was extra. They call that the boot, right? Yep. So that was the remainder. You know, we couldn't roll it all in the amount of time. So what am I going to do? Hey, I'm going to call Jeff, and Jeff can put that money to work in a 1031 exchange fund, if you will. Can you walk me through, because most people kind of, I think, understand what a 1031 exchange is, but maybe you can touch on that. And then, okay, so you want to put the money into a fund so that you're not all into, you don't have to be a landlord, as Correct. You mentioned. Right? Yeah. So we're the landlord of all these 1031 exchanges, but you can go into a fund and actually diversify.
Right. You can actually look at as little as $100,000 into one of these Delaware statutory trusts. And you'll hear people abbreviate it to DST, but it's a trust that's situs or created in Delaware. It's pretty straightforward, right? And when you think about trusts, those of us that have trusts, most of people that have anything worthwhile have a trust, right? Well, you own all the assets in the trust. And this is the same thing. You're the beneficial owner of the assets in the trust. Well, then what's in the trust? It could be a $100 million apartment complex. It could be an Amazon fulfillment center or a Walgreens or student housing or senior housing. It could be any of that stuff, right? And so we have all of those kinds of things in these Delaware statutory trusts. And what we do is we're essentially the broker, kind of like the real estate agent in this case, and these big, giant real estate companies. We call them sponsor companies. They're the ones that are putting these properties in there. They're going out and finding the apartment complexes. They're the ones buying the self-storage. They're the ones that put all of these packages together and make them available. So we have a menu, a list. It's like, okay, I have these 10 or 15 or 20 or 30 different offerings. And so somebody can come to us and just like kind of with your situation, just say, well, I just have some leftover that I want mm-hmm. you to take care of. And we do that all the time. Or they can say, I'm really done landlording and I want it all to go into these. And we can build out a portfolio of different kinds of real estate in different parts of the country. They don't have to manage any of it.
I thought it was really interesting for a lot of reasons. Number one, it was easy. But number two, so I'm this guy that is relentlessly local. Any of my friends or any listeners that hear the show, I'm, you know, investing into startups here locally. And, you know, I'm building a family compound, as we talked about earlier. This is, I'm going to die here. And there's an opportunity when you go into something like this to diversify a little bit, which is, you know, one way of investing. So I think you put me into a couple of properties. One was in North Carolina. I think and maybe it was an Amazon building in Texas and another one somewhere else. But you could go into multifamily, you could go into industrial, but you could also diversify geographically. I thought that was interesting.
And I think it is really a good strategy, right? Because you don't want to have all your assets in South Florida and the hurricane comes through, which does happen. We have a lot of stuff in South Florida. It's all insured. But it's still, you know, what did happen? Did the roof get blown off or whatever, right? And so you want to have things that are spread around the country and you want to have different kinds of assets. I love self-storage. It's, you think about self-storage, when somebody leaves, you just sweep it out and make sure the light still works.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an easy asset to maintain. So I like that. I like anything that we can kind of raise the rent with inflation. Right.
Okay.
So that we can keep pace.
Well, I want to talk about the economy, but the other thing that, so as I think the building that we sold was, it was a couple of years ago, if I remember correctly, but one of the options that you kind of brought up was oil and gas, right? Higher return if you go into, and then obviously gas prices went up. It was, I assume that did pretty well or is doing pretty well.
Yeah. Oil and gas is another interesting investment strategy. You either love it or hate it, I think, for most people. Or maybe you're agnostic or hate it. That's kind of maybe a better way.
Well, everybody wants a good return, right? So it's risk reward, though, I suppose.
It is. So what happens, there's different ways to invest in oil and gas. So there are drilling funds where you're risking your money. They're drilling wells. And you get a return based on what oil or gas they produce. Now, the benefit of that is you can get a huge tax benefit. And so for those investments, it's great to offset other kinds of capital gain, not 1031, but other kinds mm-hmm. of gain that you have, or just ordinary income, because you get, 80 or 90% tax deduction on whatever you invest in the first year.
Okay, so you can get that on something that's, let's say, ordinary income. Let's say somebody's cash flowing really well, got a business that's super successful. You can take your profits out of that and put that into oil and gas, and it's almost expensing it, right?
You're correct.
Accelerated depreciation.
Well, we can just use the tax code, right?
Okay.
It's not a loophole. It's not cheating or any of that stuff. We're using the code, right, to find ways to invest that will give you a tax benefit. And oil is still one of those things that the government knows we need it. And so they give you a tax benefit. The big deduction up front is this intangible drilling cost tax deduction. And so you can get this big benefit up front. And then there's a depletion allowance, which you get 15% of the income coming back as tax free. And you get depreciation as well on all the equipment they use to drill. So there's a lot of tax benefit to it. And you are actually providing, we would all like to have lower gas prices. That's how they get there, right? And so we like that. And then you actually can 1031 exchange into oil and gas mineral rights. And now this is where you just own the mineral rights. You're not involved in the drilling or any of that stuff. And you just get whatever comes out of the ground, you get a little piece of the action. And so we have a couple of companies that do that as well. So that's 1031 into oil and gas, or oil and gas for a straight up tax strategy.
Okay, so you brought up the government. I think I did earlier in the show too. I want to get to opportunity zones in a minute because those are very intriguing, especially if you have a big capital gain and then you can't deploy it into a big commercial building. It's better to go into, or it's more feasible in most cases, I think, to go into a fund. So that to me is really interesting how you can go into a opportunity zone fund. But the economy. So we're talking real estate is a lot of this stuff that we're talking about, and interest rates going up, recession on the horizon potentially. How What do you think is going to happen for 2023 and maybe beyond? How do you approach this kind of thing?
So I look at, first off, if we look at 2022, it was the worst stock market performance since 08. So it wasn't a good year. NASDAQ was off about 30%. I mean, it was pretty ugly. And so if you're in the traditional investment world, right, the traditional stock brokers, they're going to sell you stocks, bonds, and mutual funds, right? Well, you would have suffered all those losses. But if you had invested in bricks and mortar in real estate through a fund, that's fine, right? We don't typically use REITs, real estate investment trusts. We actually do where you have direct ownership through partnerships or LLCs or Delaware statutory trusts. There's different ways, right? Well, those didn't suffer those kind of losses. In fact, they made money. Yeah. And so what we recommend is that our clients have about 30% of their assets in real estate, in hard assets. And you can do that with, and it's passive. You don't have to buy a rental house where you have to manage people and all that kind of stuff. You can do it with the passive real estate that's available.
Yeah, so in this type of thing, you go into the fund and you, so you own a 1% of this, you know, apartment complex or something like that. So you get cash flow on that because the thing is cash flowing, it's making money.
Yep.
And then it goes up in value simultaneously. And then eventually there's an exit, right? They sell the... They liquidate and they sell the apartment complex.
Yeah.
And then you get a gain.
Correct.
So walk me through that process.
Yeah. So there are different tools, right? So with the Delaware Statutory Trust, again, you're the owners because you're the beneficial owners of the trust. So whatever the gain is, you get it, mm-hmm. right? It was your money. You own it. You get the gain. If it's one of these LLCs or partnerships or one of those things, typically there's a preferred return. You have to get all your money back plus X, right? And then there's a profit share that goes to the general partner, the company that sponsored the whole thing. And so once you've met your preferred return and all your money back, then it's like an 80-20 split, 80% mm-hmm. to the investors, 20% to the sponsor company. And we have had some amazing results in that kind of stuff. And so when I look at it, if you can get stock market-like returns in real estate and not have the downside of the real estate.
Plus you're getting some cash flow.
You're getting cash dividends, flow.
Even in a dividend stock, it's not that kind of cash flow.
No, it's better. Yeah. Right. You're getting much better cash flow than what you can get in the traditional, you know, stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. When you think about the economy, I mean, the government just passed another $1.7 trillion bill. That's inflationary. And the state of California, as we're speaking, is printing checks and sending them to people. That's inflationary, right? The government knows they're creating inflation. I don't know why they don't care.
Printing more money, it's kind of...
It's going to make inflation worse.
Yeah.
That's going to drive the economy down. So what's going to happen is you're going to have the Fed keep on raising interest rates. For every 1% they raise interest rates, you lose about 11% buying power in the real estate that you're trying to buy. Mm-hmm. So think about the housing market, right? So your homes are going to lose value because people can't afford them now. Right. I mean, we talked to a lot of people. They can't afford to buy the house they presently live in now because interest rates have pushed up. And that's going to keep going because they're going to have to keep, you know, doing things to counter inflation that the government, in fact, is the one creating, right? So it's going to be this kind of, you know, stagflation kind of thing going on.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. So I guess nobody can predict it 100%, but they say if you turn on the news, CNBC or something, yeah, the interest rates will go up another, you know, they'll keep raising them at least through the first half of next year. And so you mentioned, you know, 12% back when in 79.
Yeah.
I think I bought my first house in 83 and I had to buy down my mortgage down to like 11.5% from like 14.
Yeah, the good old days.
Right? Yeah, yeah. So because inflation, that's what they do when inflation starts running away is they just keep, you know, jacking it up all the way. At that point, it was like at 14%.
Yeah.
You're not going to go that high this time.
I don't think they'll go that high. No, I mean, that was crazy time back then. But, you know, right now, look at what it's done to the housing market. I mean, the mortgage industry has been decimated already.
Softened.
I mean, companies are laying people off and closing doors. I mean, it's not going to get better for a while in the mortgage side of things. It's kind of the first people to be impacted.
It's interesting because the supply, there's still this pent up demand for the product, for the houses, yet there are... you know, people can't afford them. You can't go sell your house where you got a 2.5% interest rate and then roll into a, you know, 7% interest rate. It doesn't pencil.
Right.
So either people are hanging on to their homes. So it seems to be softening, but there's still kind of a demand. There's not enough houses.
Right.
It's kind of going to be interesting to see.
It is. We're not going to have an 08 kind of a thing. We're not going to see home prices drop 50%. That's not going to happen, in my view, right? You got to look at it and think, well, builders have definitely slowed down because they don't want to be holding the inventory because nobody can afford to buy it. And so the pent-up demand is going to continue to be there. You've got new household formations as young people get married and start having kids and things, right? So all of that's going to continue on. But what we're sort of creating is a nation of renters. And so from a good news, bad news standpoint, well, it's okay if you're the one that owns the rentals, right? And so that's why we do all this securitized real estate, because the demand is there. And so why not own it? If you own single family rental properties yourself personally, right? Well, those are going to lose some value, but you may not care because you're collecting the rent.
Yeah.
And you can raise the rent. Yeah. And you hold it long enough, it'll be back.
Eventually, if you've got a mortgage on it, you're eventually paying off the mortgage. And, you know, it's probably not the bad thing to have.
No, and it'll come back. And like I say, I don't see it dropping like 50%. That was a crazy time back in 08, right? That's not happening. And the banks are secure and everybody's, you know, we don't have the same problem. It's a different problem. But it is going to impact people trying to buy homes. And so that's going to slow the real estate market. We are going to see home prices drop, and we'll see some other things drop a little bit. You know, we kind of mentioned industrial. That's not going down because every company is trying to grow their industrial warehouse. So retail is shrinking, but in its place, everybody needs a warehouse now. And so, you know, I think industrial is a great asset to own. And again, any multifamily kind of asset is great these days. You know, so, but it is, I think 2023 is going to be a tough first half for sure. And then we'll see.
We'll see. Well, let's talk about opportunity zones. So I'm imagining, and I know we were talking about the Entrepreneurs Organization prior to this. I've been the president for a few years ago. And I run in these entrepreneurial circles where people, and I'm investing into companies that eventually they're going to have an exit. They're going to have a big gain, and might be, you know, 50 million, sell their company for 50 million or 100 million or even more. When that happens, you can't roll into a 1031 exchange,
no.
Right? That's a real estate related. You sell a piece of real estate, you can defer the gain by rolling into another piece of real estate.
Yeah, it has to be rental, you know, it has to be investment property.
Yeah, but people that build a company that has a lot of value and then sell it, then they get the capital gain. Talk to us about that, because that's where the opportunity zone came into my mind as being something that would be a real good fit.
It's perfect for that. It's perfect for, you know, you've sold some stock that you got from the company or something where you have a big gain and it's not this real estate related gain. Then the opportunity zone is perfect because there is no limitation on what kind of gain it qualifies for. Any gain, right? Maybe your Bitcoin's worth a whole lot or something. You know, any of that gain is fine. And so what happens?
You got out in time.
Yeah, if you got out, if you still have a gain in your Bitcoin, right? So anyway, but any gain, sell a company, sell stock, any of that stuff where you have this big gain and there's really no other option, the opportunity zone is perfect for it because you can go ahead and put the money, just the gain portion. So your basis, your cost basis, you put back in your pocket. We don't want that part. Just the gain, you put in the opportunity zone fund or any portion of it. You don't have to put it all in there. And then you can defer paying the capital gains tax federally until December 31, 2026, and then you'd actually pay it in April 2027. Well, all these companies are building like apartments and self-storage and, you know, all that kind of property, hotels, all kinds of things. And so what happens is they'll have it built before 2026. They're going to refi the property and give you like half of your cash back tax-free.
Get your refi because it's basically a refi. You're getting cash out refi. There's no tax on that.
Right. And then you use that. So you use tax-free dollars to pay the tax that's due at the, you know, in April 2027.
And then this property, if you hang on to it, this in within the fund, if you hang on to that, it goes up in value over 10 years. And then at that point, is there no federal tax?
Correct.
When you
it
sell
is
it?
Completely tax-free federally. California is one of the few states that is not participating in this.
But that's kind of interesting thing is that entire gain is tax-free, not tax-deferred.
It's tax-free. So it's a great, think about it as a giant Roth IRA, right? So you put in, let's say you put in $1 million, You get cashed out, you know, in 2026 to pay your tax, you get some money, but that million grows to $2 or $3 million. And in 10 years, you do have to hold it 10 years or longer. So once you've had it 10 years, they sell the property, you get $3 million back, all completely tax-free federally. Mm-hmm. Again, state of California is going to hit you, but federally tax-free.
So your clientele, let's talk about who your clientele is. These are people that know how to win. Obviously, they're highly successful people. And there's a part of society, I think, that maybe... thinks that everybody ought to get a participation trophy. And then there's another part of us, the entrepreneurial people, the people out there taking risks, making sacrifices, putting it all on the line, and failing a lot as well. Yeah. When they do well, they get this big gain. But being around those people, and you're one of those people. Let's talk about winning. What have you picked up over the years in terms of commonalities that you see in people that know how to win and that actually do it?
I think one of the things that you kind of alluded to is risk-taking, right? Because there is nobody that I know of that just went out and it was always success, 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 right? It is trial and error and trial and error and then a home run and you keep on moving. And I think they also have the mental drive, right? Nobody has to call me and tell me to get up in the morning and go to work. Right. I own the company. I get up and go because I like it and I like winning. Right. And I think that's the real key to most of the people that I work with. Right. They're the same mentality. It's nobody has to hold their hand or, you know, I'm calling in sick 52 days this year or any crazy thing. Right. They're out there killing it every single day and they love what they do. And I have people from all walks of life. I have people that have worked from, you know, big corporations early on in Intel and Cisco and, you know, Google people and all kinds of people that work for another company, but they still have that same, you know, that ambition, that drive. They were there and they were, you know, kept after it. My wealthiest clients are self-employed. They built a company, you know, so they started from scratch. They got on it and they never stopped. You know, they were just like, let's keep driving this up. And at some point in time, typically, you know, around 60 or so, you know, above 50 for sure, they go, hey, there's an opportunity to exit and I'm going to take, you know, my 50, 60, $100 million and say that was good. But then all of those people do something else too. I don't know really too many people that just sit back and start clipping coupons. I have one of my brothers actually sold where you get the discounts at the pharmacy. The app, right?
Yeah, okay.
So he created one of those and sold it. You know, it's kind of undisclosed dollar amount.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But so he took that and then he's parlayed it. He actually owns some of those cookie companies, the Cookie Crumble.
Oh, Crumble. Oh, a little of those. Is it a franchise?
Yeah. So
he's putting the money back into the economy.
Yeah, he bought two franchises.
Driving opportunity for people.
Yeah.
Creating jobs.
And he's 70. It's like he could quit, but he's like, and do what?
That's interesting that it's 70. Okay, let's talk about that. It's 70. Where do you think that drive comes from? Like everybody's not built that way. Where does the drive come from, you know, there's a certain group of the population that's like, I'm a driven individual.
Yeah. I think part of it is, and again, not always the case, but you know, that self-employment thing is part of it because again, you don't like, I can't imagine not doing something every day. And not just golfing or something, right? Because a lot of people retire from a company and then they're golfing every day for the rest of their life. And actually, I was talking to one of my reps in Nashville, and he said he had 110 games of golf this past year. And he said that was probably a little more than what he needed, you know? And so he's looking, you know, it's like, okay, well, let's get busy. And,
well, it sounds like he's driven to play golf at least, right? He's probably a great golfer.
But he is, and he's kind of funny because he was a top performer where he was when he retired. And now he's, you know, working with us kind of part-time. And he's like, you know, I'm really ready to jump back in, but I don't want to work full-time. It's like, well, you don't have to, right?
I'll form this in a question. When you get a taste of what it's like to be on a championship team, maybe to lead a championship team, to win, right? It could be in business, it could be in sports. We're talking to Mark earlier, right? We're talking about sports. But when you get a taste of success, even if you're 70, you still want that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just think that it's, and I don't know if it's cultivated. I don't, you know, I was, when I was growing up, there was, it was a big family. There were eight kids in my family. And so there wasn't a lot of structure. You know, it was pretty much, you know, raise yourself and here's some food.
And so I just
have all of these, you know, my natural state is take care of yourself. I don't ever look to somebody else to go, well, what do you think?
Well, so there was only four brothers, three brothers and a sister, and we're all 1 year apart in my family. So we had a lot smaller family than you, but it sounds similar.
Yeah.
Because if you tattled on your brother or sister for picking on you, I was the third oldest, so occasionally I got picked on a little bit. I would get in trouble for tattling, right? It was like, you two fight it out. And my parents would actually just let us fight. I don't know. I mean, it sounds like you were raised in one of those houses. Well, you just figured it out, guys.
Yeah. Yeah, it really was. I mean, dad was working and mom was trying to keep her thing rolling along. But, you know, most of the time we were just out and about and living our life. And, yeah. You know, it was like, figure your own stuff out and move on. So for me, that's been a blessing in business, right? I haven't ever like looked for somebody else or relied on somebody else. It's just like, no, let's step up and do what we have to do to get it done. And that's, I think, comes back to that same thing of, you know, I get up early. I get up about like this morning, I got up at 4:45, and you know, that's pretty much my normal time. Get up and I work out and I go to work and I don't ask. And typically I don't, again, ask anybody else, is that okay or anything? That's what I do. And then usually go home, you know, reasonable by 6, have some food and, you know, I'll relax for a few minutes, but the relax button doesn't last very long. You know, it's kind of like, oh, what else? You know, I know there's, you know, business never ends. Right. And so it's like, hey, what else could I get done? So I'll maybe knock out another hour or so at home, you know, of, you know, just working on the business too. What's next? What can we get done?
So I work out too. I think some of our audience knows I do some yoga. I get up early as well and do yoga and or CrossFit. Sometimes, to like today, I did both. And you're a fit guy, right? You're a fitness guy.
Yeah.
What's that look like? And when did that sort of click? Because you, it's like at our age, it's not like being fit goes away. Any younger listeners might be thinking, well, when I'm old, you know, I don't know that many people that are 60, 65 years old that are working out all the time. But it doesn't really go away, right? You still want to be in shape. Yeah. At least that's how I feel.
So it was kind of, I got lucky on stuff, you know, that happened. So when I was in the Army, right, you were working out every day. And then when I got out of the Army, I came home and one of my brothers, my oldest brother, Gordon, was like, hey, you want to go to the gym? I'm like, yeah. Let's go to the gym. And mm-hmm. So
you're already in shape.
Yeah. And we started working out and then he went off and did whatever he did. And I started playing racquetball and lifting weights and stuff. And I've just never really stopped. And so, you know, there have been different degrees of fitness, right? Like, mm-hmm. Hey, I've had a gut and we just got through the holidays here. And man, there's a few pounds I got to get rid of again, right? So that happens. But when I turned 60, I started going, hey, you know, I'm not a kid anymore. You know, I need to make sure I stay fit. And then I did a couple of crazy goals. We were talking before we went on. I walked on hot coals with Tony Robbins and I did, you know, the skydiving and all at my 60th birthday. And then I did another kind of crazy thing at 61 where we did, you know, the glider planes. And then at 62, I thought, well, let me do something that's not, because I can't just keep jumping off of stuff, you know, or crazy stuff, right? Yeah. I got to do something else. And so I said, you know what, I'm going to get 6-pack abs. And I had never had 6-pack abs. So at 62, I just worked my butt off. And I will say that's the hardest thing I've ever done. And
that's more than sit-ups. That's what you put in your body, too.
I had to drop a bunch of weight. So I normally weigh 180, 185. I got down to 167 pounds at 6 foot. That was trim. Mm-hmm. And I also, part of that was 100 push-ups in a row. So I did 100 push-ups in a row on my 62nd birthday.
No way.
Yeah. And
100 push-ups, like all the way down and all the way up? Yeah. Without a rest.
Right. Yeah, the last one or two were a bugger.
Like, I'm a guy that is, you know, in my peer group, I'm good at push-ups, but I can't do 100 push-ups. No way.
You have to work up to it like anything, right?
Push-ups. That's
so
awesome.
I have older grandsons. Like, my oldest grandson's 18, and, you know, I still think I can outdo them on pull-ups, you know?
Wow. Okay, so next time you come on the show,
interesting. We're getting the pull-up bar.
I'll get my pull-up bar. So I haven't had a competition. One time I did a burp, because I'm good at burpees.
Okay.
I had a burpee competition with some female that came. Actually, her name's Jessica Wink. She's awesome. She owns a fitness studio. We did a burpee contest. But my buddies, we're talking about EO, my EO buddies, like Uriah Faber. And so that's we're always talking about who can do the most pull-ups. So we need to get you in our group and we'll have a pull-up contest. Or next time you come on the show, we'll have Scott get a pull-up bar in here and you and I do a little competition.
All right, man.
That's good.
I'll have to practice. Well, I'm part of the thing. It's kind of funny because we talked about this. So I work out over at S&B Elite Fitness with Jason Salinas.
Oh,
and
Jason,
you guys are connected.
I love Jason.
Right? And so, and it's kind of, and you look at his level of fit.
Oh, that guy.
And
is
it's just
beast.
Like, yeah. I mean, that guy is ripped.
Yeah.
Right?
You need him on the show.
You should
talk about fitness with that dude.
Yeah, he's
my wife's cousin, by the way. Yeah.
Yeah. No, you guys should. You should. We have a spot at 6 a.m. if you want to come work out.
So. You know what? I'm usually at yoga at that time, stretching.
Well, I, you know, it's funny with the yoga. So I started doing the hot warrior sculpting yoga.
Yeah.
Oh, my. I get tough. So wet. I sweat
It is brutal. It's as hard as CrossFit.
Yeah. I know. And what's funny is I think I'm in pretty good shape. And then those ladies typically are the trainers just kick my butt. And I'm like, okay, I've got a ways to go yet.
Yeah. Okay. So we talked about winning. We talked about fitness. What's next on the horizon? You're still pushing the limits, and I'm really intrigued. I know you have travel that you do, and your business is expanding across the country. So, I mean, what are you most excited about? I know you're helping individuals every day, and your team is growing. But what are you excited about in terms of growth for the future?
So the broker dealer that we're with, they did $1 billion of securitized real estate this year, this 2022. And I think we can do that. We did over $200 million worth of real estate. And I think we can hit $1 billion within a year or two.
Wow.
So, you know, part of that is what we've been doing in our office. We've been working with coaches to put everything together, to systematize it. We've got this learning management system where we're going to have everything in, you know, A to Z. Here's how you do our business. You know, whatever your position is, you'll be log in and, you know, you'll be able to learn it and go. We do have, 15 advisors around the country. We're looking to significantly increase that this year and we'll continue to grow that. We're hiring people now in our office locally. So not just salespeople, right? Yes, we'll take salespeople, but, you know, we need people that know how to process business. That's why I sing in the mortgage industry. Those
interesting
people,
people are laying off in the mortgage industry right now. Yeah, you're hiring.
Yeah. Okay, they would be a perfect fit because they understand attention to detail.
Yeah.
Right. It's like our business is super attention to
detail. We're a little bit like that too. We're venture capital and we the same type of people. You need to be good with people, but you've got to be detail oriented. You got to be able to have good follow through.
Yeah.
Good computer skills and that type of
thing. Then marketing. We do a ton of marketing stuff. So our marketing team is always growing as well. Yeah. And then ultimately, you know, it's sales reps. I do need a sales manager. I do travel around doing live events. So last year I did 58 live events. So a couple a week, pretty much out there, you know, hitting it. And then plus we did another probably 50 or 60 live Zoom, you know, webinar type things.
Yeah, I see that stuff. It's an interesting way to build a business, a financial services type business. I think it's really intriguing. It's really got my attention. You're a good speaker. So why did you decide to take that avenue to grow your business, the event? Is it because it's face-to-face? Is it because your skill set lends itself to that?
I think that a lot of that. I actually like getting in front of the group. I know it's kind of a funny dynamic. Most people, it's like their biggest fear is speaking in front of a group. I'm kind of like, no, I would like to do that all the time. You know, so have an unusual connection to doing that. And so going around, it was funny. I was talking to my son. I was like, man, I'm traveling all over. And he said, well, you wanted to be a public speaker. Now you are one, right?
That's really
in a national stage where you're going around doing these public events. And so it is fun. And I really like educating people about what we do. You know, it is such a unique niche, if you will. And most people, you wouldn't believe how many times we've seen people where they, you know, they didn't understand the rules with 1031. And so they didn't set up a qualified intermediary account. They just thought, oh, I'll just take the money and then I'll do it. And then they owe $1 million in tax.
Yeah.
Right. And well, they're like, oh, my gosh.
And it's like whose job? That's an interesting question, too, especially for the average person out there that maybe sells a rental house or something like that. And has a gain. They want to roll it into a 1031 exchange or something. The real estate agents, by and large, they're not really giving tax advice and that kind of thing. And they know enough about it to be dangerous. You really need someone to hold your hand unless you have a great realtor like my daughter. But you really do, or you, right?
Well, what
or
was you. Nice, yeah, she because knew what was going on, which is great. And you're right, most of the realtors out there don't know what's going on with 1031. They don't know the rules. Worse, CPAs don't know the rules. We do continuing education for CPAs every week. We teach mm-hmm. them how this all works too. And then financial advisors are probably the worst, because the typical financial advisor doesn't do this, right? They're not in our niche. And so we had one that happened here just a few months ago over in the San Jose area, where our rep was trying to help a gal. She was selling a property for $2.5 million. Low basis, like 30 or 40,000, owned it a long time. And then her financial advisor said, just take the money, we'll figure out the 1031 mm-hmm. after. Yeah. And then they found out. Now they owe over $1 million in taxes. And the only option now is the Opportunity Zone Fund. And it's okay for a second choice. It was not the best choice.
Yeah. You know, there's great financial advisors out there that have that want only what's best for you. And I happen to know some and be friends with some. And then there's others that they don't get paid unless you buy stock from, through them.
Right.
So, or bonds. They kind of have their little package. It's like, why would I recommend a 1031 exchange fund when I don't get paid on it? I'd say the lion's share of them kind of fall right to that category.
And I tell people, with all the licensing I have, I can pretty much do anything financially. But most people aren't in the same boat as me. And so it's kind of like hiring a contractor where all they have is a hammer. Everything looks like a nail, mm-hmm. And if you're, only insurance license, you're going to try to get people to buy insurance. If you're only a stockbroker, you're going to try to get people to buy stocks. Right. And so by having the full capability, we can actually assist people. Like, the best solution is this, whether we do it or not. Like, we don't do legal documents, but the best strategy might be some legal documents, maybe a charitable remainder trust or a charitable mm-hmm. LLC, right? So those are tools that we know, and we work with attorneys that use them. We don't draft documents or anything. So there's a lot of things that can be done if you know it's out there, but you absolutely got to have the client's best interest at heart, period. And unfortunately, there are people out there that have a license and they mm-hmm. don't have the best interest of the client. They are trying to line their pocketbook.
Yeah. Okay. So only a few minutes left. What did I not ask you? What did we not get to that you wanted to make sure that we impart to our audience?
Well, I suppose I should let everybody know, if they do have rental property, we would love to give them a copy of my book. I think we've given you a copy before.
Yeah.
So, Are You Tired of Tenants, Toilets, and Trash?
Yeah, right.
So if the title resonates.
Am I tired of those? Yeah, kind of. I'm not even a landlord, but I don't like that stuff.
It was funny when it came to me. I'm like, well, if the title resonates with you, we're a good solution, right? If you're still trying to build a real estate empire and you love managing and, flipping properties and whatever, we're not the answer. I mean, we can give you some good advice, but we're not the answer for you. And so I think that's something we'd like to share with people. And I think just the idea that we're really, if you have a tax problem, we're tax solution planners, right? We look at the whole picture. We're not going to do your taxes for you. We'll work with your tax person. Yeah. Right. I speak tax. I understand it. I'm not going to do somebody's taxes for them. But, I do a lot of creative stuff with my own CPA. And so I'll run stuff by her and I'm like, hey, I'm going to do this. Are you OK with that?
Yeah.
And, or am I going too far off the ledge? One of the things that we are looking at, and we don't have it perfected yet, but I made a significant investment into solar in 2021. And I did that to offset taxes that I had. And, from a tax strategy standpoint, it's 100% tax deductible. There's ways that you can do that. So we're looking for the right relationship to be able to bring that to the masses.
Oh, gotcha.
And so, what I tell people, like, I put my money in these things first, mm-hmm. right? I experiment with my money before I invest clients' money. And all of the different alternative real estate that we do, I'm the first investor in before I offer it to any client.
One thing I feel like we should point out, this is not a solicitation for business. No. We aren't, we want you to do what's right for you. Basically want to educate you. And one thing that came to mind was the term accredited investor. at the Growth Factory, that's really what we're focused on, is people who are accredited, who basically have a net worth high enough or enough income that they're, I guess, the upper income or upper net worth, that there, you know, there's regulations around who we can deal with. You guys have that too?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So you do have to be an accredited investor. So, and specifically, it's $1 million net worth, excluding your personal residence. Doesn't matter what your home is worth, your personal home. Mm-hmm. Could be $2-3 million. Doesn't matter. Doesn't count. And then, or you can make $200,000 a year personally, or $300,000 as a couple and qualify. And I really like to point out the reason why is because, like, these real estate deals are not liquid. Mm-hmm. Right. You can't just get in and get out like a mutual fund. You have to have staying power. And that comes from a big enough income or net worth to be able to stay in. And, you know, the worst thing in the world is for somebody to, you know, you're a real estate guy, you know, the capital gain is all at the end. Mm-hmm. Right. When we sell the property, right, there is no capital gain until it gets sold. And so somebody has to be able to stay in. It might be a 4 or 5 year hold. It could be a 10 year hold, like on the opportunity zone. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that is why it's for accredited investors. Sometimes I don't think it's fair because the people that are not accredited, you know, the returns on these investments are pretty exciting.
Yeah.
And so it's a little unfair, but I know why. It's because those people are more likely to have a need for the liquidity.
It's interesting because I don't think it's fair either. I think it's leaving a whole section of the population out of the game. We see that in the startup community too. So why are these, you know, venture capitalists are the only ones getting into these early stage deals? And I think it's partly because the stuff that I'm investing into is a lot more risky, right? Venture capital and investing into startups, it's not investing into real estate. It's super risky stuff. So the SEC is trying to protect maybe the novice investor from getting in over their head when they're, right, you know, they haven't, you know, built the net worth.
Right. And I think, you know, with the latest, you know, with what's happened recently with the Bitcoin and other, you know, types of assets, right, is it's an eye opener for people. It's like, you know, yeah, anybody could invest there and maybe you got caught up in that FTX garbage and you lost all your money, you know, and, you know, there are precautions out there on purpose. Now, you know, hopefully that's a one-off thing, but, you know, all of these rules are there to help the average person, you know, steer clear of these things. And so, yeah, high net worth people should have, first off, a little more financial acumen and certainly the ability to sustain a loss if something happens.
Well, Jeff, I really appreciate you coming on the show, sharing the information. And I always look at it as, we end up becoming the composite of the people that we spend the most time with. So you're spending time with very successful people. I got today to spend some time with a very successful person. Definitely an honor. I think you made me better, opened my eyes to how to approach things. And I know you helped our audience. So thank you very much. I
appreciate it. Thank you for letting me be on your show and love the connection. Looking forward to future events, and I think we'll see you at your upcoming fundraiser.
Yes, Comedy for a Cause, supporting the veterans, January 28th. And as a veteran, you know, we're trying to help people that are getting out of the military get off on the right foot when they get out.
Perfect.
Love it.
Now, let's get Mark's perspective and closing thoughts from today's show. We're back to the Marquee Media Studio. It's the Mark Haney Show.
Great show today. Educational, inspirational. When you see and hear from a guy like Jeff about how he's winning, it makes the rest of us think, well, maybe I can do it too. And obviously when we win, if it's building wealth, we want to be prepared to keep it rolling so that we can pass it along to our children, invest into our local community, give back. There's all kinds of great things that happen when we build wealth and we keep that wealth. So thank you, Jeff, for sharing your story on the show today. Also to all of you out there that are fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. And of course, for the entrepreneurs, you are at the heart of why we started the show, why we started the Growth Factory. Nobody builds a truly great company alone. And so this is about rallying the community together to support you, because what you are doing in fighting the good fight is nothing short of inspirational. So thank you. It's my purpose to help you build your dreams. And so to you and all you out there working to build some wealth, create that dream for your family here at the Growth Factory, here at Haney Biz, here at the Mark Haney Show. We're never above you. We're never below you. Always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in this segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.